Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, the Mariners have given people a reason to be optimistic about what is to come in this, hopefully, uninterrupted season. We'll see what happens with the
lockout.
Whenever
it happens.
It'll happen. It'll happen. I'm just going to bet on them not being that dumb. That's what I'm betting on. But our guy here from 710sports.com does a great job of writing a lot of pieces about a lot of different things, but wrote one specifically about newest acquisition, Robbie Ray. I want to talk to him about that, so he joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Our buddy Brandon Gustafson is here. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to talk to you. And you've written a few pieces on this. I know you're a big baseball guy, so this will be a good conversation to have. But first of all, before we get into details about who he's been in his career and who he is now, how surprised were you by this signing?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. Part of that was we saw a few reports that they were really tied to Kevin Gausman, who had a really, really fantastic year for the San Francisco Giants, and he wound up signing with the Toronto Blue Jays, which, funny enough, is where Robbie Ray starred for the Blue Jays last season. So I was pretty surprised by it. We just didn't really hear his name tied to the Mariners, and it was one of those things where you knew that they needed to go out and get one of these frontline starters in free agency or in the trade market or something like that. But I think myself, like a lot of other people, was pretty surprised that Ray ended up being the guy. But, I mean, you could do a lot worse than signing the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner to anchor the top of your rotation, that's for sure.
Brandon, sorry to disappoint you, because Wyman isn't here, so your quota probably won't get hit. The son of a Gustafson quota, but I'll try to sneak it in six times, so there was one. But when you were digging into the numbers, and you kind of saw Robbie Ray's stuff, we talked about the strikeouts. Jerry DePoto mentioned what he can bring as the strikeout guy. All these numbers you wrote about in your article, which is, again, on 710sports.com, Mariners Breakdown, what to know about Robbie Ray. What jumped out at you when you really dove in and saw how impressive these strikeout numbers are?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that stands out that not a lot of people realize, I mean, he led the American League in strikeouts last year. He struck out about 250 guys, but he's arguably the most prolific strikeout guy in MLB history among guys that have 1,000 innings in their careers. He just reached the 1,000-inning threshold this last season. He has the most strikeouts of any pitcher in MLB history in their first 1,000 innings, and he has the career record for strikeouts per nine. He strikes out 11.2 guys per nine throughout his career. And it's just it's pretty impressive what he's able to do, especially because he's mostly a two-pitch guy. He's a fastball slider guy. He mixes in a curveball and a changeup as well, but he really focuses on those two pitches. He throws those combined about 90-91% of the time. And that slider especially is really, really effective for him. He threw it a lot this year. He got more than half of his strikeouts with that pitch, even though he used the fastball a lot more. And he throws hard. He's a 95-mile-an-hour average guy from the left side, which is just some big-time stuff for a starting pitcher. But guys just did not hit that slider. Guys could not touch that slider. He absolutely excels at missing bats. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see the kind of punch-out numbers he's able to bring using those two pitches here.
What's changed with him? Because this isn't who he was the year before, certainly. And I know it was a goofy year for everybody out there in a shortened season. But, you know, you look at the seven games he had with Arizona, not a good run there, and then he ends up in Toronto and wasn't great in that half of the season either. Again, shortened season, but hadn't really, outside of one year in 2017, hasn't really been this guy. What's changed with him?
Well, he just commanded the strike zone a lot better. That's something that's really been an issue for him throughout his career. He's always been a fairly high walk guy. I mean, last year you mentioned his struggles with Arizona before he got traded. He walked 31 guys in 31 innings. I mean, he's walking a guy an inning last year before he gets moved over to Toronto. And then this year, he just totally cut down on that. He threw 193 innings. He walked just over 50 guys. So just a much better command of the strike zone with his pitches, and getting guys to chase obviously is a big part of that too. But just looking at him, I was looking at some video of him from his starts last year versus this year, or, you know, the 2020 season versus 2021. And a lot of it was the same. I know that he talked to Mike Salk yesterday about his arm path and things like that, trying to shorten that potentially, and that not working out. And it did look a lot the same, but he kind of was twisting more in his windup in 2021 versus 2020, and he looked like he was just getting down the mound a little better. He had a little more intent, and he gained weight in a good way. He looked a lot bigger. I mean, everybody talks about the tight pants and everything, but I mean, it's true. The guy put on some really good weight and he was just throwing gas, which obviously helps to miss bats when you've got an elite slider like he has too. So, I mean, that's part of it. And I think that he kind of now knows what it's like to go a full season with that kind of success and that motion and everything. So it's going to be cool to see how he's able to build off of just an outstanding and stellar 2021 season.
See, that's what I need to do. Put on the good weight. Not just weight. Put on the good weight.
You're not getting either kind of weight.
Well, maybe we'll have the tight pants.
You weigh 14 pounds.
You don't have to worry about that with me. My pants are the opposite way, the too loose pants. Hey, Brandon, you had another breakdown in this article about one potential area of concern. You said where he struggled was in terms of limiting hard contact, but there are some reasons that might not be as much of a concern here in Seattle. What kind of are the things that you saw about Ray and his hard contact and what might happen with him as a Mariner?
Yeah, I mean, if there was any knock on him in the 2021 season, it's just he found too many barrels. Guys were hitting him hard when they were able to get contact off of him. I mean, he had one of the worst average exit velocities among starters in all of baseball, even though he was out there just dominating most of the time. But he's going from the AL East where you're playing the Yankees and the Red Sox, and even though the Orioles have kind of struggled, Camden Yards is historically pretty hitter-friendly, and then the Rays obviously have been extremely successful over the last few years. And coming out to the AL West, I think helps a lot. The Astros should have another potent lineup and the Angels have some guys, but it's a lot less dangerous coming out here to the AL West if you're a starting pitcher than making most of your starts over there in the AL East. I mean, he gave up, I think it was 33 home runs last year and 21 of them were to AL East opponents. The Yankees roughed him up with about a 7 ERA, and then T-Mobile Park, pretty hitter friendly, even though they moved the fences in a few years back, but the Marine Layer and early in the year and late in the year, you know, it's harder when it's not as warm to hit the ball out of T-Mobile Park. So I think that that'll help him because, walks and home runs are two areas that throughout his career he's struggled with, even though he's got the high punch-out numbers. But I think that making half of his starts here at T-Mobile Park will definitely help, and not going out and facing the Yankees and Rays all the time will definitely help as well.
I gave my wish list yesterday before Stroman was signed with the Cubs, saying in addition to what they've done with Robbie Ray and Frazier, which I like the Frazier move, and we can talk about that in a moment, and Andres Munoz, they signed him to an extension. I would love to have seen them get Stroman and then bring in Chris Bryant and re-sign Tyler Anderson. Now, maybe I'm being greedy, but what as it pertains to Bryant, we talked to John Morosi earlier about, you know, Chris Bryant. There's obviously legitimate interest from a number of teams, including the Mariners, and same with Trevor Story. Between those two, if you can only have one of those two, Bryant or Story, who do you like for this team?
Personally, I like Bryant more just because
that's the right answer.
Such a clear area. Yeah, I knew you'd like that. But, you know, to me, it's like a 1A, 1B thing, right? I mean, if they sign Trevor Story over Chris Bryant, I don't think I'm going to be upset. I don't think anybody's really going to be that upset over it. But Bryant's a natural third baseman. He can play some corner outfield for you, obviously moving to the American League. He'll have the ability to DH if that's required of him. And I think that it's something where just his presence in the middle of the lineup will be huge, because even though I think Trevor Story will be able to go and succeed wherever he goes, the question about him hitting away from Coors Field is a legitimate one. I mean, the home away splits for him over the last few years are definitely something that you can't just shy away from. It's a real thing. And that's not necessarily just for him, but that's a lot of guys that have started for the Rockies and then gone elsewhere. But I really like Chris Bryant a lot. If he's able to stay healthy, I think that he's a legitimate run producer for a team that desperately, desperately needs that. And I think that he'd be just such an awesome addition. But like you said, there's going to be a lot of teams that are interested in Chris Bryant because of his age and what he brings from a positional standpoint with his ability to play multiple spots, but also just the fact that he can hit the ball out of the ballpark at a good clip and drive in a lot of runs for you.
Where do you think the Mariners are in terms of needing to acquire more free agent pitching? I know Jerry Dipoto has said, you know, they might want to buy one and then trade for one. So they went out and they got Robbie Ray, and you would think they might need another guy. But also, I kind of think back to, remember the end of last year, we were all so excited about Matt Brash, and then he never got in. And now you have a guy like Matt Brash, you have Brandon Williamson. How close do you think those guys are, the young arms, to taking the next step? Or do they still need time to develop and the Mariners need help now for the first couple months of the season?
Well, the thing is, you can never have enough pitching, and we've seen that from some of the better teams over the last few years that make deep runs. I mean, even the Atlanta Braves, they ended up winning the World Series, but they were down on starting pitching down to the end as well, and they're making bullpen starts in the World Series and the playoffs and stuff like that, and obviously you want to try to avoid that. And I know that bullpen starts is kind of a touchy subject up here with them, you know.
Yeah, no more of those,
out of
probably.
The playoffs and happen to do that. Yeah, exactly. But those guys are all really close. I mean, obviously, Brash was able to make the MLB roster but not make his MLB debut at the end. And you mentioned Brandon Williamson. They also have George Kirby and Emerson Hancock. So I think that something that would make a lot of sense would be signing, you know, somebody kind of on the cheaper end. I know Bob brought up Tyler Anderson. Being able to re-sign him, I think, would be a really good move, and then have him kind of anchor the back end and potentially move to the bullpen when those younger guys are ready to be a long relief guy who could slide into the rotation if needed because of injury or spot start or whatever it might be. Ryan Yarbrough, who started his career in the Mariners organization before he was traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, sounds like he might be someone that the Rays would want to move on from. He might be non-tendered. So I think that he's somebody that would make a lot of sense for Seattle as a reunion, because he's somebody that has that experience both as a starter and as a reliever. So it would be cool to go out and see them, you know, get another big name starter, whether that's through trade like Luis Castillo with the Reds or something like that. But with all those young guys in the minors that are just right on the doorstep, I mean, it wouldn't stand a reason for them to go out and get just kind of a cheaper veteran guy as more of a stopgap until those guys are ready in, say, like May or June.
Yeah, we could package Diego Castillo in some sort of deal, and I'm sure we could bring in whoever we'd like with that gem. But, hey, let me ask you about Toro. He's an interesting guy. Obviously, that was not a popular trade amongst fans and players when it happened. Then he turned out to be a nice offensive piece. He cooled off, you know, from the way he started. But I didn't love the way he looked at second base. Didn't feel comfortable with it. You now bring in Adam Frazier, who presumably would be your second baseman. So is Toro the de facto third baseman? We heard Jerry say they'd like to get him some work in the outfield. How does he fit?
I mean, he's a younger guy, so he's somebody that could be there for the long term. And I wasn't a huge fan of him at second base defensively either. I know that he's a natural third baseman. He has typically played on that side of the infield in the minors and in the majors when he made his debut for the Astros. So I think that he's somebody that could be a super utility guy. He's a switch hitter, which is obviously really intriguing when you're setting up your lineups. And I think that if he's your super utility guy instead of a guy like Dylan Moore or some of these other guys that they've had the last few years, I think that raises the floor a little bit. And we saw the offensive upside potentially. He started out his Mariners career real hot before cooling off at the end. And that you brought up Adam Frazier at second base, he's only under contract for next season. So It could be something where they are working with Abraham Toro to be the long-term guy at second base, working with Perry Hill a little extra, but not having to be rushed out there every day because you have an Adam Frazier and it's unclear whether he's going to be a long-term fit here. So there's a lot of paths for Abraham Toro for sure, whether that's as a super utility guy or a potential everyday second or third baseman. But it's clear that they are still pretty high on him. I think that it says a lot that there were reports that right after the Mariners traded for him, Jerry was getting a bunch of calls trying to get with teams trying to flip him. So clearly a lot of teams out there like Abraham Toro, and he has shown at least a little bit of potential here for the Mariners from the offensive side.
Let me ask you the same question about Luis Torrens. How does he fit? I don't ever want to see him behind the plate.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, that was brutal. But in terms of, you know, him at the plate, yeah, he had some big moments. Overall, it still wasn't great. I mean, he had an on-base percentage below 300. You know, so I'm just trying to figure out if, you know, Evan White ever comes back and becomes your first baseman or becomes an outfielder. I don't know what they're going to do with him. But, you know, you would assume Ty France becomes your DH. How does Torrens fit? Is he just a bench guy, or do you think he's a trade piece?
That's a really good question, because the bat is just so intriguing. He has a lot more pop than I think people realized. He's had some really huge moments for the Mariners down the stretch at the end of this past season. Really, really nice pop to the opposite field, letting the ball travel. But like you said, just doesn't hit as consistent as he'd like. I don't think that they would necessarily want to go into the 2022 season with him penned in as their everyday DH. I think they could do a little bit better there, especially with the amount of guys that they have coming through the system in the outfield. They would probably want to keep that spot open so they can rotate guys in the outfield. I'm intrigued by him potentially at third base. I know that there were a few lineup cards, or at least one that came out where he was going to start at third base, and then they ended up changing something. A full off season potentially working with Perry Hill would be pretty intriguing if they're not able to go out and get a Trevor Story or a Chris Bryant. Obviously, you'd rather have those guys playing third base going into 2022 than Luis Torrens, but the bat's really good, and you know, you can never have enough catching as well. Obviously, you'd prefer to not have him back there, but I mean, if you have him on the big league roster and something happened to Tom Murphy or Cal Raleigh, assuming that those are your two catchers going into the start of the season, at least you have that option there, and he's a bat that you like at least a little bit. But yeah, I'm really intrigued by what the plan with Torrens is as well, and I'd be interested to hear just how much interest other teams might have in him as well if they are trying to look to make a deal somewhere.
Well, right now, all these players that we're talking about, technically, the Mariners have no idea who you mean because they are just faceless entities on the website of the Seattle Mariners and across Major League Baseball. So for all the talk that we've done, you know, we're in the middle of a lockout, and it seems like it could be pretty contentious. I know you had some thoughts on this on Twitter earlier today. Where do you see this dragging out towards, and who's going to come out as the winners in this negotiation?
Oh, man. I mean, I hope that the players do, because really nothing that they're asking for is that outlandish to the point where the owner should just, you know, turn and walk away from the negotiating table.
But they had to do the defensive lockout, according to Rob Manfred, right? They were so threatened.
It's so bad, man. I mean, the stuff that they're asking for, like a salary floor to make teams more competitive and active in off seasons to spend more money. The universal DH opens the market for guys like Nelson Cruz potentially. And I mean, I'm tired of watching pitchers go up there and strike out and fail to bunt. I mean, it's not good for the product. I really hope that the players come out on top of this, but reading Rob Manfred's letter to the fans on MLB.com and having him say that the owners were willing to make a concession for the universal DH instead of that being just this no-brainer thing. Like, are you kidding me? That should be a no-brainer. That shouldn't be something that you as owners and MLB are willing to, you know, sign off on in order to try to drum up some more interest and momentum in the CBA talks. So I'm pulling for the player side on this. I think that really all the points that they're making are extremely valid ones, whereas the owners and MLB are just trying to kind of stick to the status quo. The longer this goes on, I think that it might actually help the players, because once, you know, you're hitting mid-January or so and report dates are starting to come up, then that's when the money starts to stop coming in for spring training tickets and visits and stuff like that. So I'm pulling on the player side, man. Even those faceless guys on MLB.com, as weird as it is to see that site get totally revamped, but nothing they're asking for is out of line by any means. So I'm really hoping that they're able to get most or all of those things that they're asking for.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You root for the millionaires over the billionaires in those situations. Hey, let me bring you back to one more position group, and you brought it up before we let you go, and that's the catchers for this team. And I know you can't go out and get the best guy available at every spot. It's just not how it's going to work. But how comfortable are you with what they're bringing back? I know Cal Raleigh's a young guy, and you know, I'll cut him some slack. It's his rookie year. He was less than impressive at the plate. I mean, if we're being honest about it, I don't think that's breaking news. I mean, he hit under 200 and had an on-base of 223, and there was a lot of swing and miss there. But he looked a bit overmatched. We'll see what kind of stride he takes. Behind the plate, he was okay. I didn't think he was great, and Murphy had a really down year. I just don't know how great I feel about their collection of potential bodies there. Are you more optimistic about what you saw to Cal Raleigh defensively and offensively, or how do you feel about the group?
Yeah, I mean, I like Cal Raleigh a lot. I know that he made a ton of strides defensively during his time in the minor leagues, and having a guy like Tom Murphy to bounce ideas off of and stuff, because Tom is so well respected in that locker room and clubhouse, and he's a guy that just commands respect from his pitching staff. I'm sure that that's something that we'll see kind of build off of heading into 2022. But yeah, your concerns are totally valid. I mean, we were all really excited about Tom Murphy after the power surge he had in 2019 and limited action for the Mariners, and then misses all of 2020 and comes back and rough start at the beginning. And he had his moments here and there, but overall just a pretty down year, at least at the plate. So what made it tough was this was just such a bad free agent market for catching that even if you wanted to go out and sign a veteran guy to either have Raleigh get a little more seasoning in the minors or to have as his backup and move on from Tom Murphy, potentially there wasn't a whole lot of options. There are really only one or two guys that are potential starting everyday catchers that were on the market, and both of them were a little older. But Cal's got a lot of potential, obviously. The power is huge. Him being a switch hitter is really intriguing for setting your lineups and being able to avoid mismatches with opposing bullpens and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, you got to be willing to cut him a little bit of slack. And the gap between AAA and the majors is just so much wider than it's ever been. You're seeing so many guys that come up and struggle and take some time to find their footing. Obviously, Jared Kelnick's a different breed and was a different level of prospect than Cal Raleigh was. But, I mean, it took him until September and a demotion for him to really get anything going. So I'm excited for the future of Cal Raleigh. I'm interested to see whether it's something where he does start the season with the big league club or they give him a little bit of time at AAA. But defensively, I think that there's a little bit of room for improvement, but overall he's pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm pulling for him. I'm pulling for him, definitely, and it is a small sample size. I was just, you know, just looking at the group going in, going, God, I don't feel real good about any of them, really. But, you know, he's the one with the ceiling that can be reached. I think we've seen as much as we need to out of Torrens behind there, and then Murphy hopefully can bounce back a bit. But great stuff, Brandon. You guys can read Brandon Gustafson's work at 710sports.com. A lot of different articles out there pertaining to the Mariners and everything else. Does a great job. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Take care.
Thanks,
Brandon.
Brandon Gustafson of 710sports.com. Coming up, everything is wrong with the Seahawks right now, but can they fix themselves this offseason? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
You seen that commercial for that Kurt Warner movie?
I don't like Kurt Warner, especially that era.
Why? Oh, that's right. You're a Titans fan.
He's overrated.
I enjoy. Yeah, yeah.
There's a Kurt Warner movie coming out?
Yeah.
Like Underdog or something.
Like that. I can't tell if it looks like it's cheesy or if it's going to be really good. I feel like it's going to be one extreme or the other. I don't know that. It just looks like one of those movies you're not going to walk out and go, yeah, it was okay. Like you're going to go, oh, that was great. Or, boy, that was kind of weak.
I'm so happy he used to stock shelves. And then he played football.
And then he made
good
it
for
to,
him.
And then he beat the Titans.
And then he won the Super Bowl.
He beat the Titans in the Super Bowl.
So inspirational.
Paved his way to a Hall of
Fame
career.
Who doesn't beat the Titans?
Wait, who's playing Kurt Warner? Or is it just Kurt Warner? Or are they CGI in his face?
No, it's
I don't know who the actor is.
Now we'd have to do some research on this.
Yeah, I just.
American Underdog.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Starring?
Zach something? I don't know. Hang on.
Well, that narrows it down.
Well.
It's that Zach fella.
Zachary Levi.
Oh, yeah.
And Anna Paquin.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. He's, I mean, this is some nerdy stuff, but he's Shazam. He's a superhero. That's what I know him for.
Well, hold on. He's in something else, right?
I think.
The movie Shazam?
Yes. Yeah, the one that came out like 3 years ago,
okay.
I think. Yeah.
He's playing Kurt Warner. Okay.
As long as you're not Kazam with Shaq.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. That was good stuff by him.
Yeah.
All right. I saw that preview there. I couldn't tell.
Oh, Chuck. That's what it is. You ever see that show? Chuck. Pretty funny, actually. He was Chuck.
Was that the one with like the secret agent that worked at Staples or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. It was on from 2007 to 2012.
Really?
There you
what
go.
Channel was that? That wasn't
it's
like an HBO show.
It
was
like
a
USA,
network.
I think that was like NBC, I think. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go. I saw the preview, caught my eye, and thus the conversation. As far as the Seahawks go, the question is, can they fix themselves this offseason? Now, that's the beauty of football. Unlike baseball, where it's a slow build, unless you're the Yankees or one of those teams with just unlimited funds and you're going to just buy your way out of a hole. In football, you've got the best chance to turn things around in a rapid fashion. Everybody's held to a salary cap. You know, the haves and the have-nots are kind of on the same playing field financially. But it's about scouting and making the best decisions and finding the right pieces that go together. And we were talking, I think, during the break about you know, fielding these super teams, if you will, that are expected to, they're a bunch of all-stars, they're a bunch of Pro Bowlers from other teams, and you throw them all together, doesn't work out very often. And you're seeing it with the Rams right now. They're trending the wrong way in a big way. We'll see how it ends up for them. But right now, that collection of superstars hasn't resulted in what they wanted. We saw it with the Eagles years ago where, you know, when they brought in Nnamdi Asamoah and they had all these different players, and I think Vince Young is the one that dubbed them.
Yeah, so the dream team, they had LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson,
that
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's and he wasn't alone. Others were saying the same thing, and that turned out to be a disaster. I just don't think it works that way in football. But, you know, in terms of what the Seahawks can do, can it be fixed? Certainly. But I think they've got tough decisions in front of them. You know, we talked to John Clayton about this, who has been steadfast in his defense of Bobby Wagner throughout the season. But one of the texters asked him a question, hey, of these players, who's going to come back? And it was like Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Dwayne Brown, and I can't remember who the other, oh, Quandre Diggs. And on Bobby, he was, well, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they do there. And even he agreed, hey, if he's back next year, it's not at the number that he's making right now. There'll be a restructuring of his contract.
Yeah, there was something really interesting. I'm trying to pull up Spotrac right now about Bobby Wagner. If he's released after this offseason, I think it would save them a good chunk of money. Okay, so here it is. So if they would have released him this year, dead cap would have been $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
If they release him after the season, the 2022 dead cap is only 3.75.
Yeah.
That is a vast
difference. It's very enticing.
But that's a lot. Why are you going to let go of your franchise core defensive stalwart at linebacker just to save a little bit of money if you don't have a significant replacement?
I don't know that that's your only motivation.
That's the issue, though. There's no replacement. We talked about how thin they are.
Mm-hmm.
They have no one at linebacker right now.
Now you got Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton. And
Cody Barton's barely played linebacker because he's been hurt, and
yeah.
Bobby Wagner takes every snap.
But just looking at who's on the roster at linebacker, that's who you've got, and you've got Ben Burkervin who will come back.
I know that's an interesting theory. I'm not sure that in itself is going to solve much. I mean,
could you find somebody to do what he's – to provide what he's providing? That's the question. Can we get that level of production out of somebody else for a lot cheaper? And to me, this is not a shot at Bobby, who's been a fantastic player, still a good player. He's not the impact player that he was. He's not making those plays. And if you're just talking about flat out, you know, if you want to just look at tackle numbers, that's as deceiving as it gets. And we've talked about that before. Where are those tackles being made? Are they being made at the line of scrimmage? Are they being made at the mesh point? Are they being made tackles for a loss? Or are they 7 yards down the field, which is where a lot of them are coming into play? So those you can look at the totals and say, well, look, he's already passed 100 tackles. He does this every year. Again, very deceiving number.
Well, I don't think every day, every play, seriously, he doesn't take a play off. We've seen the snap counts from him. I don't think every play Mike linebackers come cheap. And I don't know if you could get someone who would cost significantly less, who could provide similar amount.
Well, but,
what's important?
But you just said something that may be part of the problem.
And
every play, Mike linebacker, should he be in every play?
I mean, part of the issue is they don't have anyone right now.
Based on his age, you've got somebody who could spell him for a couple plays, and it's not going to result in a touchdown.
I think Ben Burkervin getting hurt impacted a lot of that. I don't know if they do have anyone who could spell him for a couple of plays. And it shows that they don't really have confidence in Cody Barton. He also has dealt with some injuries. So I think in terms of needing to blow it all up, I don't know if you have to. The issue, I believe, comes back to the draft and what you highlighted earlier, that they haven't drafted well in their key picks. And here's something critical to keep in mind, is that everyone's bemoaning the lack of a first-round pick this year. Well, if they stay with this bad record, their second-round pick will essentially be close to a first-round pick.
It'll be close to where they're normally picking.
They're going to be drafting at 36th.
It'll be close to where they're normally picking.
That's still a good, important pick. It's just, do you trust them now? When you have a second-round pick, you have a third-round pick, and you have two fourth-round picks, they are going to have the pieces there.
They've got a fifth and a seventh, right?
You have a fifth, let's see, yeah.
Or a fifth and a sixth. They're missing one there.
Compensatory picks, yeah. No sixth. They have a
fifth and a seventh.
Yes. And then, of course, some compensatory things that could happen there. Projected compensatory pick in the seventh.
So they're not going to be picking far away at all from where they normally pick. And they often trade out of the first round when they're towards the bottom.
But, yeah, so a second round pick is going to get you essentially what you had anyway. Do you now believe that these guys they pick can come in right away and provide that depth? That might be a big reason why you cut back on Bobby Wagner's snaps, or maybe even make the move to let him go. If you can identify a linebacker you're confident can come in and do that.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a linebacker you expect to come out of the draft and be in that spot full time.
And that's tough. So then there's really no alternative.
Well, no, you can make a trade. Maybe you sign a free agent out there. The draft is not
or
the only
Bobby
way.
Wagner. Or Bobby Wagner. Sign a linebacker and then get rid of Wagner, or
yes,
trade Bobby Wagner.
Either.
That's a tough contract to take on.
Well, it would take a restructuring.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to take on that contract, and it would be one of those deals where they'd have to eat part of it if it didn't get restructured. So they have options. It's not your only avenue in talking about the draft. Well, can you draft somebody to fill that spot? Well, the answer is probably not. You hope you could, but the idea that somebody's going to come out of the draft in the second round and be your starting.
So are you along the lines, it kind of sounds like, are you along the lines of this season has shown that it's not just a one-year blip, that you kind of have to blow it up? That, you know, 12-4, now all of a sudden 3-8, you're not as confident that they'll get back to more of a winning 12-4?
No.
So you think, yeah, that
no,
lends
I think
you to believe
you've
that
make,
you kind of have to make a
you've
massive
You've got to make tough decisions.
Overhaul.
Yeah, you've got to make, doesn't mean you get rid of everybody. No. But where's your money being spent? You're not going to get rid of your franchise quarterback unless he's just making waves in the offseason that says it's untenable and we've got to get rid of him. Otherwise, that's the hardest thing to acquire in this league. And we talk about it every year. You can look at the history of the Chicago Bears and the Cleveland Browns and how many wasted high first-round picks they've wasted trying to find a franchise quarterback. It is a rare commodity in this league. And as much as he's struggling right now, you want to pretend the previous decade didn't happen? Help yourself. He's still a franchise quarterback, an elite player. He's not playing that way right now. Now, unless he barks in the offseason, they're like, well, this is just, we can't do it. We're going to have to make a move. Okay, then I get it. But the idea that you're going to find his replacement in the draft and be just as well off, it's not realistic. You're watching it this year. What's Trevor Lawrence doing? The number one overall pick? He's going to be the savior. He's the greatest quarterback anybody's seen come out of the draft in years. He may end up being that guy, but right now they're dreadful.
Well, that's because his coach is Urban. No, I won't sing it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got one rookie
quarterback.
Feel like
John didn't sing it today. We had to.
Yeah, he wasn't going to sing today. He didn't have the voice for it. But you've got one rookie quarterback playing well, and that's Mac Jones. And he was at the bottom of that group of Justin Fields and Zach and all these different players. You know, so the idea that we're going to draft a quarterback and they'll be just fine without Russell Wilson. No, you won't. He's the best quarterback in the history of this franchise. He's still far from washed. Far from washed. You got a lot of problems around him. He's part of the problem right now. But the idea that this is who he is moving forward for the rest of his career, I'm sorry, man. The previous decade tells me more about who he is than this you know, three-game stretch. Okay? So there are tough decisions that will need to be made when you're talking about who's eating up the majority of the salary cap. And outside of Russell, Bobby's the next guy on that list. He's the next highest paid guy, along with Jamal Adams, who's in his early 20s, so his future's still in front of him. You know, tough decisions are going to be made, and we'll see how big it goes. But there will be an offseason reckoning. You can bet on that. All right, coming up, should we be about the potential length of the MLB lockout? What does that mean?
I probably just forgot to say worried. I probably forgot to just type that.
I'm reading going, wait, did I misread that? No, that's what it says. All right, should we be worried about the potential length of the MLB lockout? I don't know. We'll tell you next. It's Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Text number is there for you. Text line is there for you. The number is 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. It's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We got a good one that came in there. The 253 says, Bob being Ron Burgundy and reading anything never fails. Ha ha.
I don't know. I think it would have worked if you just would have gone with it. Should we be about the lockout?
Should we be about it? 253 is absolutely right. You write it down, I'm going to read it. And half the time, I won't realize what I said until a texter goes, dude, what are you talking about? And we were reliving the glory days when we used to do updates way back in the day. And our producers would write the updates. And our producer at the time, Colin Paisley, instead of writing Jason Vargas, wrote Justin Vargas. And I just read it, didn't think anything of it. And I started getting blasted on the text. You idiot. You don't even know who plays for this team. And just, you know, texters being nice the way they are.
Well, that explains the Trevor Seymour.
Yeah, or Carter rushing off the end. I'm still not sure who that is. But anyway, I wasn't even aware of it. And then we figured out, oh, he wrote that in there. And I just blew right past it. So then he started putting those little Easter eggs in there each update. Like, let's see if he catches it. And 9 out of 10 times, I wouldn't. I got conditioned to look for it. But if you write it down, Lefko, as you know, you write the teases. If you write it down, I'm going to read it. That's usually how it goes. So there you go.
I'll sneak in some jelly bean references next time then.
Yeah, I'll just blow right through it and be like, what are the texters talking about? Why are they mad? I don't get it. And meanwhile, what we were trying to say is, should we be worried about the potential length of this Major League Baseball lockout, which is in place? And I'm not that worried yet. Talk to me in a month, couple weeks, maybe my opinion will change. As we sit right now, I really do feel, as much as I disagree with how Manfred's handled this, some of the things they've posted and said, I think they understand what's at stake here. And I think they've got a pretty clear picture of the momentum they developed this season. You don't want to get in the way of that. Baseball's been struggling for years to try to find their place amongst the NFL and the NBA and really appeal to the youth and get some momentum behind their product. And it started happening this year. I think they get that. I think they understand it. Is either side going to get everything they want? No. There's going to be a compromise. That's what every negotiation is about, compromise. You know, to what extent, we'll find out. But in terms of worrying about it, you know, filtering into the spring training, at this point, no, I'm not worried about it. I think they'll get it done. But, you know, a month from now, I could be sitting here wringing my hands, sweating, going, what are they doing, man?
Yeah, the problem is, you mentioned it, the momentum. You would have liked to continue this three-day frenzy of free agency. And now, if there wasn't a lockout, who's to say it would have been like this? But to continue an entire month of excitement, talking about leading into free agency and leading into spring training, not just, all right, well, they did it, and we're going to go take a month off, and maybe we'll talk about it again.
Timing's terrible.
What's worrisome is that it seems like both parties are satisfied with just brushing their hands of it and say, all right, see you at the end of January.
And pointing to the other side. Yeah. Saying, well, they're the problem. And
that seven-minute meeting, it just screams there's not a lot of goodwill on these sides. So my concern is, what is it actually going to take? And you know, you kind of feel like it's going to be the players, right? They have to make a concession because the owners,
they both will.
The owners, if they lock them out, they're pretty confident, it seems like, in their stance, because this isn't a player strike. This is the owners having all the control and saying, we have this. We have the keys. You know what? We're happy just letting you dangle in the wind until we want to come to the table. That's what's concerning to me. And if that's the case, now I don't really know. If that's the case, do you think if the owners have the upper hand, are they more likely to want to miss spring training games or not?
I think as soon as it affects their bottom line, that's when they start to soften their stance.
Because I know it will affect gate at the regular season.
Yeah. Well, even spring training, it starts to impact it.
But from what it sounds like from Rod Manfred, any concession from the owners is going to cost them significant money. Oh, we can't handle this. We're going to lose so much money if we concede any point.
This is,
so are they willing to maybe lose a little of that minor gate?
This is a PR spin. Point? This is him painting themselves as the victim and the players as unreasonable.
Oh, no one buys that. But because that's what they think. That's my concern is that, well, if the owners think that they're going to lose more money by capitulating to the players, then maybe they're fine missing a couple of weeks of spring training.
Well, if they think it's going to end in everything ending up in their favor, they'll take the short-term loss for the long-term gain. If they believe, hey, we're going to bite the bullet, we're going to take the hit here with spring training, but in the end, we're going to end up making a lot more money, certainly. But if they're not certain of that, that, hey, players may dig in their heels and this could really, really impact the product, the impact how it's perceived, how we're perceived, the gate, how many people are buying merchandise, how many people are paying for season tickets and concessions and parking. They're going to take all of that. And if any of that is in jeopardy, that's where they start to get a little shaky.
And you know, maybe it's bad, maybe it's good. After today, because it's fresh in our minds, this lockout has happened, we're not going to be concerned with this for another month, because as long as there's no news, it's not like every single day we're going to keep worrying about it, because there's nothing new to worry about.
No team's getting the upper hand
on
the Mariners right now.
We don't have to worry about it, but then it's not the forefront. And then all of a sudden, everyone's kind of forgotten about baseball until, they come back to the table. So you lose so much goodwill,
and
just
momentum.
Like in 94, 95. Yeah, you lose so much goodwill, so much momentum, because after today, I don't really see a reason why we talk about baseball for another month or so.
Not unless something leaks somewhere. I mean, there's nothing concrete to discuss. There's not, hey.
And that's off.
This guy just signed with this
season
team
for the Mariners, leading into something big.
Yeah, they finally got what they wanted, which was an off season where they were relevant, which typically isn't. They are to the hardcores every year, of course. Hardcores are dialed into the winter meetings, and they're dialed into the hot stove, and they're dialed into all that. But appealing to the broader base has been their problem, and bringing in a casual fan. They were able to do that in a very large way this year. And what they're doing right now is killing their own momentum. They're killing it. Killing me, Smalls. You're killing me. So, yeah. And I think, and again, I'm making a big assumption here. I think they get it. I think they understand what's at stake. Now, to me, that's where they're taking the risk right now. It's like, yeah, we're sacrificing all the goodwill and momentum we built up to ultimately get to where we need to get to. I think they could have still kept everything going and had these conversations and come to some sort of compromise down the road.
Yeah,
I don't understand why it's so necessary to just say, well, we're throwing up our hands and we're locking the players out.
Bargaining tactic, I guess, and that's what's concerning.
But everybody knew it. There's no surprise. The players aren't going, well, wait a minute.
No, there's no surprise, but then the fact that they actually are barred from any contact, any workout, anything associated with the team, that's the first opening salvo in what could be a pretty lengthy negotiation process.
Yeah, we'll see. Right now, I'm not worried about the length of it, but Talk to me in a couple weeks. I could have a completely different opinion.
Your hair is like grown out. You have a beard. You're immersed in a shave. A cave hasn't happened.
What is happening with my game?
87 of the lockout.
I just love baseball so much. And it was finally something in my hometown to really get excited about. And now we got to deal with this nonsense. All right, everyone. That does it for us. Want to thank our guests today, John Morosi, Paul Moyer, John Clayton, Alton Robinson, and Brandon Gustafson. All joined us on the show. So if you missed any of that, you missed a lot. So what you need to do is head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that, and it's right there waiting for you. Or just hit subscribe. That's all you got to do. One click and it takes care of it for you each and every day. You don't even have to think about it. Whatever works best for you. Either way, we're back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.